Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Filling in for the vacationing Tony Gwynn Jr. And what would everybody out there want to do on vacation, Coach? Work. So here he is on his vacation, working. But we had to get you. We had to bring you in, T, because, I mean, this news with Bryce Harper is so huge, and it apparently is very, very real. The Padres are very much in the mix for him. They're going to meet with him or have met with him. I brought up to the coach, John Quintero, in the first segment, the day that you and I were sitting there at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and this guy was out there taking batting practice, hitting home runs right-handed, working on his game. And I remember turning to you that day and saying, you know what, they can say whatever they want about Bryce Harper, but that's a guy that's dedicated.
Yeah, he's – I had the opportunity just to be around him for a spring training, and he's definitely dedicated to his craft. He kind of exemplifies what our game is about now. You know, a guy who can – who has really calmed his game down. I mean, remember, Bryce was – one of those guys that was willing to run through walls. As a matter of fact, I think he did run through a wall a couple times. And we've seen a more mature Bryce over the years, but certainly one of the biggest superstars in all of baseball. And listen, the Padres, the longer this offseason goes and these free agents are available, the more likely the Padres are going to be in the thick of being able to sign some of these top-tier guys. And Bryce Harper having a meeting, and the fact that the ownership is involved in this meeting, it's a big deal. It's a real big deal.
Tony, I was saying earlier, you know, having worked a little bit in the agent business and knowing a little of the history of these two agents, Dan Lozano, who represents Manny Machado, and, of course, Scott Boras, who's been at it for a long time, represented some of the best in the business. There's also a little bit of an ego and competition going on between those two agents right now, let alone trying to get the best deal for their ball players.
Yeah, no, these are, at right now, these are the top two agents in all of the game. And ego plays a part in it. Listen, I know Scott personally. He's very methodical. He is a guy who is really cool when it comes to these negotiations and his players. He has an abundance of information available to him. So he's always one of the most prepared people in the room every single time he steps into one. So I don't know much about Lozano, but I know that everything I hear, he's a terrific agent as well. I think something has to be said about the Padres making a decision a few years back. It seems like since this ownership took over that they were going to deal with I think
Tony
Padres
Gwynn Jr.
being used as a pawn at this point, of course, they could be. But, again, the fact that these guys aren't signed, we're 2 weeks away from spring training, and the Padres are involved, I think doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get these guys in, but I think these talks are serious for sure.
Tony, do you think that the – bringing up the name Bryce Harper changes the way the Padres might feel about Manny Machado? Or do you still – because when you and I were last talking about Manny Machado, the thinking was, you know, they've kind of gotten everybody so excited about Manny Machado that if he doesn't end up coming here, I think the fan base is going to feel let down and the Padres are going to feel a little bit like they failed in their efforts to get him. But now that Bryce Harper is on the radar – do you think it changes anything with Manny Machado?
No, I don't. I think at this point, one thing we know about AJ Preller is that he's going to do his due diligence, regardless of how close we are to the top of the list or how close the Padres are to the bottom of the list. He's going to do his due diligence. And I think the reason why we're at this point ultimately is because those two guys that we're talking about haven't been offered what they think they're worth. And so from the agent standpoint, their job is to bring more teams into the fold then to see what we can get. And I'm saying, when I say we, I'm talking about player agent, what they think they can get. And I don't think it changes anything. I think we're so late into the process that any conversations you're having now are legitimate conversations. Nobody's out here trying to waste time at this point. I don't believe, at least.
Well, what's interesting, a lot of people may not be aware of this, but Eric Hosmer, you know, he signed only a couple of weeks before spring training last year, yeah. And his agent is Scott Boras as well. And so the Padres, they've been willing to deal with Boras. There are a lot of teams that they shy away from dealing with Scott Boras. They don't want to deal with Scott Boras.
You're 100% right, Coach. I mean, the previous ownership here in San Diego didn't want to deal with Scott Boras. So that didn't just mean free agents. That meant draft pieces as well. Now we flip over to the Seidler and Fowler ownership group, and they've been willing to deal with Scott Boras. You already have Austin Hedges in the fold, who's a Boras client. You already have Hosmer in the fold, who's a Boras client. That changes that dynamic because now you're picking from a different pool of players. You know, as far back as I can remember, Scott Boras has always had the top players in his staple, and it hasn't changed. And the fact that the Padres already have some guys who are in the fold that are Scott Boras clients, the fact that Scott Boras has been on record talking about the Padres organization, I think all of this bodes well, and it all kind of makes sense. That, you know, he's having conversations with a Bryce Harper at this point, that they're having a meeting with Bryce Harper at this point. I think, as I said, I think it's exciting. As a lifelong Padre fan, I think I am hesitant to get too excited, but you're not going to be able to convince me that these conversations aren't legitimate and real at this point on January 31st, 2 weeks out of spring training.
Tony Gwynn Jr., he is one of the hosts of this show, taking a vacation and joining the show with Chris Sullo and Coach John Quintero. I love how – well, you and me both, man. When we take days off, we're on the show. We don't mess around. Hey,
No, we don't.
What do you think – what's the negative for Bryce Harper and Manny Machado in terms of when they look at this Padres organization? I have to believe that they would like to compete right away for – a championship. Both guys don't really want to be part of something that's going to take a couple of years. And let's be realistic. Even if the Padres were to get both Manny Machado and Bryce Harper, and let's not get crazy, but they still have the problem of what they're going to do with the starting pitching rotation. And I wonder if that is something that the Padres would be looking to try and appease both guys, you know, in terms of chatting with them about what they have plans for on the mound. Because to me, Harper and Machado are the kind of guys that say, look, I want to win now. They don't want to wait 2 years, even 3 years. They want it to be contending right away if they're going to sign this contract.
I don't know. It's difficult to answer because, you know, Machado came from – I guess he's coming from L.A. He spent half the season there. But before that, he was in Baltimore, who was the worst team in baseball. I'm not sure that he wants to lose, whereas – Harper, he's been in contention with the exception of last year, every single year, it seems like, for at least the past four. Now, last year seemed to get away from that ball club a little bit, but I'm sure both guys want to win, as you said, Chris, but I think that's exactly the conversations you have. You only have that kind of conversation when ownership is involved. And the reason why you have ownership involved is because Bryce Harper is going to want to ask those exact questions. He's going to want to ask Ron. So, what's the game plan? We've been here in 2020. What do you have planned? Not to mention, unlike Manny Machado, who would actually be filling a void, Bryce Harper is coming into a spot where, although he would be the best of the best, there's still an abundance of outfielders out there, and three of which play right field. So, they're going to have to do something regardless. As it pertains to Bryce Harper, but I think those are the conversations you have with ownership. I think that's probably why Ron Fowler and Peter Seidler are, you know, going to be in this meeting.
You know, I think one of the things that may have obviously the date and the offers maybe not being out there. You know, we thought the Dodgers were going to make a good run at Harper, and all of a sudden they signed A.J. Pollock. They probably felt the price was going to be too high. We had heard early in the offseason that the San Francisco Giants were going to go after him. I don't think they did very much at all. We had heard reports last weekend that he was very close to signing with Philadelphia, and then those reports came out and said, no, he's not going to sign with Philadelphia. And the Padres have been just kind of on the outside looking in, paying attention. Yep. Doing their so-called due diligence, and hey, why not jump in? You got nothing to lose right now, and to take ownership over to Las Vegas, that shows me that they're real serious about this. They're just not sending the general manager and one of his assistants over there. One of the owners, or maybe two of the owners, are going over there.
Listen, the last time we heard ownership was visiting with a player, to my recollection, was Eric Hosmer. And what happened? He ended up signing to sign in with the Padres. So I think it's not so much the meeting that has me excited. It's the fact that Ron Fowler and Peter Seiler are going to be there. Because ultimately, they're the ones writing the check. And the fact that they feel like it's important enough to get on a plane and go to Vegas to see Bryce Harper means they think they have a legitimate shot. So, listen, whether they actually can finish the, you know, get the job done, it remains to be seen. But this is certainly something that I think it might be more meaningful than the Manny Machado. We haven't heard anything about ownership meeting with him. At least I haven't. So I think this is a big deal. And if the Padres can find a way to pull this one off, by golly, you'll see an abundance of moves happen right after, because they got a whole bunch of outfielders that they had to get rid of a couple of them or one of them before, even without Bryce Harper being in the equation.
Tony Gwynn Jr., last thing, we've the listeners to call in and answer this question, so we'll give you the first crack at it. 833-288-0973 is the number. But if it were everything was dead equal, Coach asked this earlier, but if everything was dead equal and you had Machado here and Harper here, which one would you bring into the fold?
Oh, I'd probably say Machado. Machado, only because of the depth that the Padres already have in right field, or have in the outfield, and the desperate need they need at third base. You look at their career and their numbers, they're probably equal power wise, but Machado's been the better hitter, you know, for a longer period of time. So I would say Machado.
I think the pitching staff would be happy with Machado, because just like we said, he's going to save somebody a lot of runs down there at third base.
You know what, guys? I'll be honest with you. I'm not convinced if Machado came here, he'd be happy here in San Diego. I think he really wants to play on the East Coast.
Once he got to meet you, Coach, he'd settle right in.
Yeah, Machado has the opportunity to ultimately say no, and before he signs on that dotted line. So if he signs on that dotted line, there's no more. He's not happy. Like, you signed on the dotted line. You had other opportunities. There's no option of being unhappy now.
Tony, enjoy your vacation, my friend.
I will. I will start now. I will start enjoying it now.
Make up for lost time. We'll see you Monday, my friend.
Take care, Tony.
All right, you guys take care.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's now time for the most electrifying segment in sports radio. Gwynn and Chris go through the best of the rest in the Big Five.
That was a brilliant segue, Chris. Brilliant.
All right, what else is going on in sports, Mr. Scraby?
Well, first off, I'm not going to get to number five just yet, because we talked about that employee at a news station that, under Tom Brady's name, remember they put that caption, known cheater? Were you here for that day, Chris?
I saw that.
Okay.
I did. It was in, what city was it?
Pittsburgh. WTKA is the station.
Right, they put up a clip of Tom Brady talking to the media.
We're still here. We're we're still here.
Right. And underneath it, it said Tom Brady, known cheater.
Yeah, well, that employee has been fired.
Yeah.
And
Thomas the Patriot fan is playing that applause, by
the
way.
I know.
You know what? I almost think that's fair. I do. Be professional.
Yes,
for heaven's sake.
Station.
Be professional.
All right, let's get to
Come
number
on.
Five.
Professionalism
number five.
Gone out the window.
The football, baseball, and softball teams of the University of Missouri have been punished by the NCAA. Mizzou will be punished because the NCAA determined that a former tutor violated NCAA ethical conduct, academic misconduct, and academic extra benefits rules by assisting 12 former student athletes with coursework. Mizzou has been hit with penalties, which will include a postseason ban for the football team for this upcoming season and postseason bans for the baseball and softball team for the upcoming seasons, as well as a 5% reduction of scholarships for all three sports. So, Chris, you're up first. Does the punishment fit the crime?
Yes. Secondly, when did all of these misdeeds supposedly take place? Do you know?
No, it did not.
Like
say
in the last year, in the last couple of years,
I think
or is this like
years.
Old stuff from like 10 years ago that's been drummed up?
I don't think it's 10 years. It's in the last 2 years, 3 years, we'll say.
Because you know who the athletic director is at the University of Missouri? Do you not?
Jim Stirk.
Oh
yeah,
who worked
totally.
Here at San Diego State.
Oh, that's why you guys know.
Yeah,
he's had kind of a rough go so far.
I love the way Scraby just looked at me as if to say, "Oh, who's Jim Stirk?" Like anyone would care.
Yeah,
you know Scraby. If you follow the world of sports in San Diego, and as a producer of an afternoon talk show, you really ought to, you wouldn't give looks like that when I mention the name Jim
Sorry,
Stirk.
I'll read up on Jim Stork.
It's not Jim Stork, and he's a friend of mine, a friend of the
gosh.
Coaches. He's a guy that I worked with. Coach has done
You're
the
a good
same.
Guy.
But he's gone to Missouri, and it has been one problem after another there. And frankly, this story is rather bothersome to me that this would take place under his watch.
Well, Coach, what do you think?
Well, a couple of things. And I've heard a couple of different things on this. Were grades actually changed?
I think they were taking tests is what I gather.
Okay, if grades were changed, they're getting the penalty they deserve. Now, if the story is that this former tutor, you know, basically donated their time to work with these athletes because they had a relationship with them, then I think that's probably okay. But I think there's more to it. I think there was some grade changing, and that's unacceptable at any level. And it goes on. It's been going on from the start of time, and it'll continue to go on. But you need to get your hand slapped and hand slapped really hard.
I'm just really, really hurt to hear that Jim Stirk is – I mean, he's connected to this. He has to be. I mean, if you're the athletic director, all of this stuff lands at your doorstep one way or the
Remember
other.
Remember when he got into the spat with the college basketball coach last year?
Oh, yeah. He had a big problem with somebody was it? No, it was the student section at South Carolina.
Yeah, and Dawn Staley and him got into it.
He
made some comments about Dawn Staley, and she wanted to sue him.
I am a big Jim Stirk fan. I was a big Jim Stirk fan here at San Diego State, but I'm not really happy with the stories that I'm hearing coming out of Missouri.
They are – some other people are classifying this as academic fraud, but you guys want to hear from Jim Stirk in his statement? He said, quote, "The Committee on Infractions has abused its discretion in applying penalties in this case, and the university will immediately appeal this decision that has placed unfair penalties on our department and programs. It's hard to fathom that the university could be cited for exemplary cooperation throughout this case," and, you know, so on and so forth. So he's not very happy with it.
Well, if grades were changed, they're going to have to serve the penalty. But if somebody just volunteered their time and worked with the athletes to study hall and stuff like that, I don't have a problem with that.
All right, Thomas.
Number four.
Rob Gronkowski is in trouble for comments he made the other day to a female reporter, and there is call from some, even though it's a little extreme, to suspend him from the Super Bowl. He was asked about what percentage chance he would retire, and he said, quote, "You guys know my favorite number. You know what I'm talking about. She knows what number I'm talking about," pointing to a female reporter. And he went on to say, "Ask her. That's the answer," end quote. And so I'm sure we all know what number we're talking here. Do you guys know what number we're talking here?
Never mind.
Okay. All right, so people are pretty mad at Gronk, and they're saying that he shouldn't be doing this while at the Super Bowl media day. So, Coach, do you have a problem with Gronk joking about this at the Super Bowl media day?
Well, that's the problem. He was trying to have a joke about it. He thinks he's pretty sharp character, wants to be the star of the show all the time, whether it's jumping into a mosh pit or whatever he likes to do, dancing up on stage. You know, I think he just put his foot in his mouth, and he shouldn't have gone that direction. It's not like it's the first time he's ever been at Super Bowl media day either.
That's true. Chris, what do you think?
Yes, he should be suspended for the game. This is absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, even I don't believe that.
And they should replay the NFC Championship game anyway. Are you going to get to that story?
We talked about it yesterday. They're not going to do it. Roger Goodell is not going to do it. So,
you know, everybody overreacts to a little bit of everything. The coach is right here. Gronkowski said he was probably trying to be fun. In fact, I'm sure he was trying to be funny.
I know he was trying to be
and
funny.
And it went off the rails a little bit.
People are just too
are
sensitive.
We kicking him out of a football game because of it? It would be a little bit ridiculous.
All right, Thomas.
Number three.
Chargers wide receiver and former Gwynn and Chris guest Tyrell Williams is an unrestricted free agent this March, and he believes that he is among the top wide receivers in the league. According to ESPN's Eric Williams, Tyrell said, quote, "I definitely feel like I'm a number one receiver, so I want to make sure that I clean up all of the little things in route running and blocking to make sure I solidify myself as a number one," end quote. So, Chris, do you believe Tyrell Williams is a number one receiver in the league?
Well, he definitely moves up the list a little bit because he was a Gwynn and Chris guest. There's no question.
He was a great guest, too.
But, no, I don't think I could call him a number one receiver in the league. Not yet, but that's not to say that he couldn't be number one. Number two, he should think he's a number one wide receiver. What are you doing in the league? I mean, if you're going to play in the National Football League, Coach, if you're going to play any sport professionally, or if you're going to broadcast professionally, I hope you think you're one of the best broadcasters. I hope I think I am. Scraby, you ought to think you're one of the best producers, even though it's not really true. You still need to think that. And I think in this case, you know, I like what Tyrell Williams has to say here. You should have a lot of confidence in your own abilities. You have to. If you don't believe in yourself, no one else is going to.
Well, Chris, I think you bring up a very, very good point. You got to go out there thinking you're the best guy on the field, not just the best guy on the team, but you got to go against other people, and you got to know that you can beat that person. I mean, for me, Tyrell Williams has been a very good player for the Chargers, not even the number one receiver on his team right now, but there's a team out there that would love to have him. I don't know if he'll ever be a number one guy. I think he also has benefited a great deal from having a lot of offensive talent around him, and that only helps you. We saw it many years ago here in San Diego with Fouts and Winslow and Joyner and Chandler, and before that, John Jefferson. And, you know, they had guys on the bench here in San Diego during the Coriella era that could have started for a lot of other teams, and those guys would catch one or two passes maybe on a Sunday. But I think Tyrell Williams, he's in a good situation right now. He's going to get some great offers. He's going to have that opportunity probably to be a number one guy. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah, I'd love to see a guy go into free agency and say, you know, I'm a free agent now. I'm not really that good. And I don't really expect to be much better than a bench guy, maybe a number four or five receiver.
Give me $40 million.
Give me that story, and that's like, you know, man bites dog.
Yeah.
You know the old story
news
of...
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay,
all right.
Good. I don't have to explain that to you, Scraby.
No, not to me.
Which
today.
Is rare, because normally I have to explain it to you.
Well, because I wasn't born in the 1900s.
You weren't?
No. Not the...
You weren't born in the 1900s.
Oh, my gosh. No, not in the 1900s.
Scraby!
Let's go. Born in the 20th century.
Let's go.
Number two.
The Dallas.
I love when you try to dig yourself out of a hole, and the hole just gets deeper.
Do you see my brain working? Like, it's trying to find a way out, and it can't. The Dallas Mavericks have agreed to a trade with the New York Knicks for all-star forward Kristaps Porzingis, league sources told Ramona Shelburne with ESPN. Porzingis is recovering from an ACL injury that he suffered last season, and the deal includes second-year point guard Dennis Smith Jr. as the centerpiece of the package being sent to New York. In addition, Wesley Matthews and DeAndre Jordan, who both have expiring contracts, could be buyout candidates. They will go to the Knicks as well. Trey Burke, who is averaging 12 points a game this season, is headed to the Mavs along with Porzingis and salary dumps of Courtney Lee and Tim Hardaway Jr. And there are also some conflicting reports, but the Mavericks may be getting a first-round pick as well for this deal. And, Coach, you're up first. Who do you think won in this trade?
Well, I think initially Dallas won.
Two first-round picks.
I think Dallas won because I think with what they have there, Doncic, I mean, those guys could be absolutely fantastic. I don't know exactly what the Knicks' plan is from what I've heard. And, of course, this came down about an hour and a half before we came on the air. There's talk, and we know about Kyrie Irving. We've heard about how him and LeBron are making up and they want to get back together. But there's also talk right now that Kyrie, when he opts out of his deal with Boston, he could go to New York, and Kevin Durant leaves Coast and team up with him with the New York Knicks. But I think Dallas got a whole lot better today.
They also got, it's confirmed they got two first-round picks.
Dallas definitely won this trade because, as I mentioned the other day, when we were talking about the Lakers and the possibility of going after Anthony Davis, anytime a team in the NBA trades four or five okay guys with some draft picks in exchange for one superstar guy, the team that gets the one superstar guy always wins the trade. That's just the way it is in the NBA. There's only a handful of guys that really make a difference. Porzingis is potentially that type of player. Now, you don't know how he's going to come back from this injury, and obviously Dallas isn't going to have him this year, but they don't need him this year. They're not going to beat out the Warriors anyway. But next year, another year, you know, Doncic has his Rookie of the Year award already locked up. You have Porzingis. Now Mark Cuban finds himself 40% of the way toward having an all-star lineup. That's what it's all about in the NBA. It's building a lineup of all-stars. The rest of the guys are just guys. So anytime you can get rid of some guys to get a superstar potentially, I think it's a very good move for Cuban and the Mavs.
They just move guys around the league.
That's right.
And with the trading deadline next Thursday, February 7th, how many trades are we going to be talking about next week where a guy's going here, another guy's going there, and both guys are going to end up getting bought out and be free agents in about 10 days?
It doesn't mean anything in the NBA unless there's a big name guy in the trade. And in this trade, the big name is Porzingis, and he's leaving New York and going to Dallas. Now, maybe this eventually works out for the Knicks. Like you said, they open up so much cap space.
Well, you remember what Tim Hardaway Jr. signed for?
You know,
four years, $71
right,
million.
The deals that these teams give these guys is ridiculous. This isn't why organizations like the Knicks are so bad. But the bottom line is the Knicks have been clearing room for superstar players now for about two decades. And
when's the
I don't
last
believe
John Starks and Patrick Ewing played.
That's what I'm saying. I don't believe they've landed a single one of those superstars other than Carmelo Anthony, who you may think is a superstar but is far from one.
Well, he was a one-man show with the Knicks because they didn't have anything around him.
The Knicks are an awful organization, and Mark Cuban fleeced them today.
All right, let's get to the last.
Number one.
It wouldn't be a State of the NFL press conference without a Colin Kaepernick question. Yesterday, the commissioner said this about Colin Kaepernick playing in the NFL.
I'll take part. Our clubs are the ones that make decisions on players that they want to have on their roster. They make that individually. They make that in the best interest of their team. And that's something that we as the NFL take pride in. Individual clubs make decisions that maybe another club won't do. And they all want to win. And they're all going to do whatever they can to win.
Well, Colin Kaepernick's attorney, Mark Garagos, went on the Today Show this morning and blasted Goodell. He said, "I think the commissioner was roasted appropriately on social media yesterday. Anybody who believes that will believe that Mark Sanchez was a better choice or some of the other, how should I put it delicately, people that were well past their prime that were signed this year." Garagos also said that Kaepernick has been working out religiously and is ready to play football again. So, Chris, do you think the NFL will crack and at least bring in Kaepernick to try for a roster spot somewhere?
Mark Garagos was the lawyer for the actress Winona Ryder when she got caught stealing clothes from a store in Beverly Hills many years ago.
It was for a role. It was for a role.
No, it wasn't. anyway, I just remembered that when you brought up his name. So he's now Kaepernick's lawyer?
Apparently so.
Apparently so. Colin, you could do better in that category. You know, this was a convenient answer for Roger Goodell to give. Let's be honest. I think what he actually said is true. I don't think the National Football League stands there and tells these teams who they should get and who they shouldn't get. But I also think that there's something to the fact that Colin Kaepernick has been blackballed out of the league, whether it be by Roger Goodell himself or just the NFL entirely. But So it was a convenient answer for him to be able to give, to be able to get an answer and not say anything.
Yeah. Coach, we have about 2 minutes. What do you think?
Well, as far as Colin Kaepernick, there's no doubt, Chris, I agree with you 100%. He has been blackballed. It's very, very unfortunate. He took a stand, whether you like his stand or not. I still think he should have been allowed to play in the National Football League. And he's still young enough to come back, but, boy, he's missed a lot of time. You know, maybe if he wants to try to get back and show that, you know, he can still play, maybe he ought to sign with one of the teams in the Alliance of American Football.
Ooh, Fleet's looking for a quarterback, right?
I guess so. All right, that's it. Thanks, guys.
That's all for the Big Five from Gwynn and Chris on 97.3 The Fan.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Levski, Meb, what a great honor to have you on the program, sir. Grab your microphone there. Congratulations on your being honored into the Breitbart Hall of Fame. This has got to rank right up there. This is very awesome, especially for a young guy that went to San Diego High School, knows all about this.
Well, thank you so much. Great to be here. For somebody that went sixth grade to Jefferson Elementary, Roosevelt Junior High, and Memorial Junior High, and end up San Diego High. And, you know, it's great. The Hall of Champions, Breitbart Hall of Fame, you know, when I was there as the Athlete of the Month, and, you want to be Athlete of the Year, and you want to be Amateur Athlete of the Year, and then you want to be a Professional Athlete of the Year. But to be a Hall of Famer is I'm trying to describe it, my emotion, but it's unbelievable. It's just so honored.
Hey, Meb, first of all, congratulations on the award, but congratulations just on how you represent yourself and represent our fine city. I followed your career quite a bit, and I remember when you were up there, I think you were on that track team when Coach Larson was up there at UCLA, a four-time NCAA champion, and every time I've ever seen you interviewed, you're just a classy guy, and I'm glad that the hall tonight is honoring you. Let me ask you this. Of all the things, you've won the Boston Marathon, the New York Marathon, all your NCAA championship events. Is there one that stands out above the other? I mean, you're an Olympian as well, winning a silver medal. What's the one race, maybe, that stands out for you more than any of the others in your career?
You know, for me, a lot of standouts, you know, the high school level, the NCAA level, and then the professional level. But the one that taps it all is the Boston victory. That's greater than myself, than anything else, because of what happened in 2013 Boston Marathon where the bombing happened. So I made a personal commitment to be able to say, you know what, I want to come back, support the race, but I hope to be healthy enough to win it for the people. And having that goal and carry it for a year and to, you know, I won a silver medal and I won New York. And the only thing that was missing on my resume was the Boston victory. And to do it that year, and, you know, it's just an amazing. And to be able to wear, you know, chant USA, USA, and on Boylston Street, the finish line, people just on their feet taking pictures. What was horrific in 2013 and 2014, it was just an amazing experience.
Yeah, what a great celebration you brought to everybody. Meb Keflezighi is with us, one of the great American distance runners of all time. I mean, you can name anybody you want to, Coach, and I'll put Meb in the race. You know what I'm saying? Look, I was telling the coach a little while ago, I and my wife once signed up for the San Diego Marathon. This was 20 years ago. And we actually ran the race. We made it. So I have more respect for all you guys than you can imagine, because I know what it took for me to get across the finish line that day. When did you realize that you had something special, a bit of a gift to be able to run as fast as you could for as long as you could?
I think I was a junior at UCLA is when I realized I had this talent that I could do it professionally. Before that, in seventh grade, my PE teacher who's here, Duke Lord, said, you know, if you get a run hard, you're going to get A or a B. If you mess around, you're going to go for a run, you're going to get a DRF, you know? So I wanted that A, and he realized when I ran a 520 mile, my God-given talent was obvious then, and he said, you're going to go to the Olympics. But growing up without electricity and running water in third world country, I have no idea what the Olympics were. I was trying to learn English, but you know, it was 97 when I won the four NCAA titles. I said, maybe I could do this as a profession. Maybe I'm really good at this. I should give it a shot. But before that, academics always came first.
Hey, man, let me ask you this. And I know a lot of other people want to get a piece of you here tonight. And again, congratulations on going into the Breitbart Hall of Fame. When you got started running, how old were you when you got started running? And what would you tell youngsters out there, maybe they're driving around with their mom and dad right now and they're thinking about, you know, being a runner, whether it's cross country, track and field, what would you tell them?
I started when I was 13 at Roosevelt Junior High, and I would tell any kid, you know, go out there, be outdoors, leave your smartphones or iPads at home, go run around the block, and then eventually it's going to become a mile, becomes a 2 mile, becomes a 5K, and it's something that you could do for the rest of your life, and it will make you a better student.
How is the experience running a Boston Marathon, and what do you think about for 2 hours out there? Does anybody ever ask you that?
Well, you know, when it's cold, it's like, why did I sign up for this? But over San Diego,
that's what I thought of when I was running my marathon. What am I doing here?
Every marathon that I've run, my new book is coming out. It's called 26 Marathon. I always thought, why am I in this? Even if when you win it, but you cushion it. But, you know, so many people invest in you. You got to do the best that you can, even when you're having a tough day. Just get to the finish line because it's very important.
Nobody's done it better ever in American distance running than Meb Keflezighi. Thanks so much for the time, Meb. Congratulations.
Thanks for having me.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
What a great thrill that was, having Meb Keflezighi, one of the great distance runners in American history. And congratulations to me. I think I pronounced his name almost correctly, like every single time, which is tough to do.
Outstanding job.
Tough to do. But I was excited for that interview. This one's kind of ho-hum. But we're so happy.
You're talking about me, man.
No, I would never say that.
I'm warning you, man.
I would never say that about you, as far as you know. The great left-hander from the Padres, Randy Jones, and there would be no salute to the champions event without him stopping by. Randy, how are you today? It's a very exciting day. I know you just got back from your spring training fantasy camp.
Yeah, but you know, as commissioner, you can tell my voice is still a little scruff, man.
Hey, it's a lot better than it was the other day when you called me.
I know, man. I might have talked too much last week, being the commissioner.
Were you giving out some fines? The kids, players not hustling
Kangaroo
and stuff
court
like
went
that?
Well, got a lot of fines and just barking at everybody where they're supposed to be and
good,
making sure everybody was, you know.
But I'm assuming it was a very fun experience for everybody. When you came on and talked about it before, I was excited about going down there. We just couldn't make it work.
We're going to work on it.
We'll get there one of these days.
Yeah,
I was just worried that you were going to make me pitch too many innings. That's all.
Well, we could have used you, man.
Really?
Yeah, you could have. You might have got 21 innings.
21 innings. That assumes that I would get 63 outs. Then
that's a lot of icing. That arm, man.
See, people never understand that the innings pitch statistic is not looked at in Major League Baseball, but it should be, because you got to get 3 people out to record an innings pitch.
That's correct.
They don't just hand it to you. You have to actually accomplish something to get that right.
No doubt. But it was a great week, guys. They had the 26 guys we had. I think they had a great time. All my coaches did a great job. We had a great time. Just a good week.
Real quick, think about that. With a year you pitched 350 innings or so,
you
got over 1,000 ground ball outs to shortstop.
Yeah, well, at least 800.
Yeah, but he also tore his arm up those 315 innings.
Well, he did not.
I should have stopped at 310, all right? But hindsight's 50-50.
You pushed that extra 5 innings out there.
Yeah, shouldn't have done that.
Hey, let's talk about what the big news here in San Diego is, that A.J. Preller and either one or both of the owners went over to Las Vegas to talk with Scott Boras and Bryce Harper and kick the tires, probably a little bit more than kick the tires if the ownership's going over there. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, why not? I think the way that free agency's going right now, they haven't signed. I think the venue's changed a little bit in the free agency market. I'm not sure what's available out there, but I don't think ownership, especially AJ, he's not afraid to talk to anybody. I mean, it didn't cost anything to talk.
But I don't think that AJ would have the owners jump on a plane, one or both of the owners jump on a plane to go over there unless he thought they really could do some business.
Well, I agree. I agree 100%, but I just think they made themselves available, you know, just through the free agency and how it's gone. I think it's shocking right now still how many free agents are out there available.
Good ones.
Yes. And so it's going to be interesting here. Is there a flurry about to happen? I don't know what's going to happen, you know, but I just think that, you know, right now maybe the big contracts coach aren't there, you know, anymore. They're not going to invest that $300 million and they're not getting a return on from the past history of it. So I think maybe they're being a little bit wiser and trying to be a little more frugal with their money instead of just, you know, giving it away.
But smart of the Padres to jump in on this thing, because if we would have talked about this a couple of weeks ago when we had John before the fantasy camp, it would have been fantasy to talk about the Padres even thinking about bringing Bryce Harper in. But I think it's very smart of them to jump in on this because the opportunity has kind of availed itself to them.
Yeah, and the opportunity is there. And if the numbers make sense, you never know what might happen. I don't care. I don't know if it's a 1 year, 2 year. You know, I don't see much more than that. You know, maybe three. But, you know, I'm just not sure, you know, what they're looking at. And they've talked about Machado, and there've been conversations. Now they're talking about Harper. And we'll see what happens. But I'm just kind of keeping an open mind. And, you know, you can get all the outfielders you want, but you better get somebody for that hump.
Well, that's the problem. I said last week, Manny Machado, last I saw, is not a pitcher.
Yeah. And you read my mind, Coach. I think.
Well, you got to have pitching. I mean, and right now, you know, they've got some guys that are back into the rotation guys. And we talked earlier, they've got some guys, and guys that you've seen down in spring training last year, and they're a year older now. Guys like Logan Allen, who had a marvelous year in Double-A, was the Double-A pitcher of the year in the Tex League, went up and did great at Triple-A in the few times he was up there. Anderson Espinosa coming back from Tommy John, Denelson Lamed. You've got Cal Quantrill. You got Paddock. I mean, they've got some guys down there that aren't guys that are going to fill out a rotation. They've got the arms to be a number one and number two starter.
You know, and is that person over there? I talked to Matt Strom, and he's over there early working
That's
out.
That's a guy that nobody's been talking
and
about.
There's a sleeper, and there's my sleeper right there. I like Matt. I like he's got the right temperament for a starter. Loves to battle. He's a gamer. I see him stepping up, maybe getting one of those five spots. And, yeah, Denelson Lamed, I saw him obviously rehabbing. We're not going to see him till the latter part of the year.
Probably June, maybe July.
Maybe July. It's going to be after All-Star break, in my opinion. But I also know he's throwing like from 125 feet. Ball was coming out of his hand about 91 miles an hour. You know, I know the coach is over there telling him to back off. And like it'd been seven straight days when I was over there. Since seven straight days, he wants to know when his first bullpen is. And they haven't got him on the mound
yet.
They're
going to have to really watch him.
Well, in talking to him, though, he's still, you know, he's still that same number one right-handed pitcher that I saw last spring. That mentality and everything, and talking to him, it's still all right there. Just got to get that healthy arm and see what he can do.
Randy, let's stay with this pitching staff for a second, because you know these kids as well as anybody. Do you think if the Padres did not acquire a single pitcher from another organization, that with what they have now, in the next couple of years, 2-3 years, they could build a big-time major league staff with just the guys that are in this organization right now?
I think they could, but I think you still need that number one. You need kind of a leader, a veteran guy.
A veteran.
You really do. You need to have that. And what that does is that speeds up the process. Here you got a lot of young men. I would give anything if one of these young left-handers or these young arms would step up. Just step up and grab the bull by the horns and be the number one or number two starter. They all have the ability, but now I just don't know if they have the mental tenacious, you know, attitude to go out there and be that right now. I don't know if that confidence level is high enough. So it's going to remains to be seen. I'll always look forward to spring training with these kind of arms. You know, like you mentioned, Logan Allen. You know, I haven't even seen him yet. He's got a lot to prove, but hey, he's getting an opportunity. And that's all you got to have is an opportunity.
You know, I'm really anxious to see, and I talked to AJ over the holidays a little bit, and, you know, I asked him, you know, they're talking about Urias starting the year at shortstop right now and Kinsler being kind of the second baseman, and they're looking for the third baseman. You know, I asked him, but what about Tatis, bringing him up and let him play third base a little bit, get his feet wet? And he goes, nah, we don't want to do that. When we bring him up, we want him to be the shortstop. So it sounds like to me, unless something just, you know, he goes absolutely crazy in the spring and they can't send him down, he's going to start the year in the minor leagues.
Yeah, I think that's pretty simple. That's a business decision, not a baseball decision. I think that's just not starting the meter too soon.
Yeah.
You know, so you don't accelerate him into a, you know, arbitration eligible a year early.
How about if Bryce Harper signs? Do you do the same thing with Tatis, or you try to get him up here and try to make a run at the division this year?
No, I keep to my plan. I really do. I mean, you can get Harper here. And like you said, I haven't seen him on the mound either.
Could you imagine them signing Bryce Harper? Could you imagine Bryce Harper in a Padre uniform?
It is so spoken like a real pitcher, a true pitcher, though. He's right.
No, you got to have pitchers.
You got to have
him. And screaming about
you know,
that.
You got to have him.
It's the one thing Kevin Towers, you know, God rest his soul, but all you need to win is pitching, and more pitching.
Well, and the good
and
thing,
right.
The Padres, they got a great bullpen.
Oh.
I mean, they're bullpen, and they got guys that aren't even going to make this ball club. They're going to be sitting there in AAA chomping at the bit to get that phone call to come up.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got guys they can roll in there throwing 95 to 98 miles an hour. And that Munoz, that young kid, he's throwing 103 miles an hour. Did you see him over there? That guy throws 103 miles an hour.
Amazing. Amazing.
What
and
is
short
going
arms
on?
It, too. You know, and a young kid named Reyes is the same way. I've watched him, you know, throwing just about 198 miles an hour. Unreal.
Yeah, somebody told me Munoz is breaking balls a little bit iffy. I go, you don't need just spin it every once in a while. Make sure they don't swing at it, and then come back with that 103 mile an hour fastball.
Are you kidding me? Just throw a two seam fastball. Forget it, instead of a four seamer. That's good enough by me.
Yeah, they got arms coming out of the you know what over there.
Yeah, and then and that's the positive thing. Yeah, but arms are one thing. Pitchers are another, Coach. You know
I
know that.
I know.
Yeah, but it's time for some of these kids to step up.
We've seen a lot of throwers.
Oh, man, haven't we?
We're looking for pitchers.
Yeah, but I'm excited about the opportunities, you know. Got to get lucky with a couple of them, don't you?
Yeah.
Come on, you know that.
Got to get lucky with a couple of them.
Yeah.
Like Dad used to say, every once in a while, a blind squirrel
finds an
acorn.
Yeah,
well,
I love it.
I don't think the Padres are blind. I mean, I think they're actually well sighted right now.
No,
they've got a lot of good
but
possibilities.
Prospects. You got to make them big league pitchers.
Right.
Let's get Harper. Now we only got, eight outfielders. You know? That's a lot of outfielders, Coach.
I know, but that's.
You know what?
There's some tough decisions.
But that'll cover a lot of ground on fly balls.
Yeah,
eight guys out there.
You can't
be hard
put
to
four
get a base
guys
hit.
Out there.
Oh, you can't do that?
Yeah.
Hey, I know they need pitching, but I will tell you this. The mayor of Petco Park, Randy Jones, if they sign Bryce Harper, he'd go out and buy a new pair of boots for himself.
You'd be pretty excited. Come on.
Yeah, I would be pretty excited.
I mean, the
excited.
Randy Jones.
That would be really
the
cool.
The Randy Jones barbecue would fire up a Bryce Harper
you'd
menu.
You'd probably see
item.
A new pair of ostrich boots on opening day.
It
no doubt in my mind.
It would be pretty exciting. Yeah. It would be exciting.
Hey, let me ask you this. If Bryce Harper signs between now and February 17th, your golf tournament, you think you might have a signed Bryce Harper jersey as one of the prizes for one of the great golfers?
Well, yeah, if he can do it like you can sign him like Thursday or Friday, Coach, that'll give me time to get it signed. You know, that'd be perfect.
Hey, let me ask you this. Are you sold out yet for your golf tournament?
Yes, as far as players, yes, we are.
Okay.
Yeah,
is there anybody out there if they wanted to be a part of the Randy Jones Foundation golf tournament? Is there anything they could do?
Sure. All you got to do is get a hold of us and you get a hold of the randyjonesinvitational.com. Get on there. Always looking for volunteers. We need scores and people to help out that weekend. All the money that goes to help our military kids, like you and I doing the banquet Sunday night after the tournament. And just a festive weekend at the Rancho Bernardo Inn. And anybody wants to come out and help us, it's always appreciated, Coach.
Oh, it's a great time. Thanks for inviting me.
You bet.
And being a part of it again. This will be my third straight year, and it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of great people.
A lot of great people.
Including Randy Jones. Always a great person.
I'm just hanging out.
Say hi to Marie for us.
I will, my friend.
Have a great evening, and we'll see you shortly here. Spring training's coming right up.
I'll wait till you guys interview Harper when we sign him, all right?
We'll have him on.
And I promise to buy you a hot dog on opening day in the press box.
What a team.
Come about the fifth inning.
I won't have time for that.
The
come
fifth
on.
Fifth inning on, they're very affordable at that time.
Hey, you guys, have a great night.
Thanks,
Randy.
Enjoy your night. Salute to champions. Continue.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Chris Ello along with the coach, John Cantara, and right now we're joined. You know, the last time we had this gentleman on the program was about, I don't know, 6-7 months ago, and he was just about to become a Hall of Famer. He was nice enough to join us in Cooperstown, San Diego's own Alan Trammell, now a certified Major League Baseball Hall of Famer. Mr. Trammell, thank you so much for the time. How are you?
Well, it's my pleasure. I'm doing great. It's been a heck of a year, I can tell you that.
Not bad.
I'm still enjoying myself.
I was going to say, once you get into the Hall of Fame, what are they, how do things change? I mean, they always tell you, like, when you get married, you're going to get married, your whole life's going to change. You don't know what they're talking about. I always hear the same thing about making the Hall of Fame. Everything changes. You're always going to be introduced as Hall of Famer Alan Trammell, right?
That
they add to
true.
Your name.
That is true, and I will say I'm starting to get used to it. I'm shaking my head as I'm saying that because I still have to pinch myself. But, you know, again, now that it's been a few minutes past, I'm enjoying it. And again, that HOF on there, now when I sign something, of course, you're putting that on there. And it's very cool, I have to admit.
Sure.
You know, Alan and I graduated the same year in 1976. He was at the legendary Kearney High School. And back in those days, North County was kind of an afterthought. But, you know, I followed his career. He probably didn't follow my career. But one of the highlights...
he came right over here and said, hey, coach, and gave you a big hug.
I know
he
him.
Knows your career.
Well, but here's the deal. I've got an All-CIF certificate at home that I was given in 1976 from the Breitbart Athletic Foundation. They had three All-CIF teams. I made the third team. I was the first guy in Torrey Pines history to make
Not bad.
Any baseball All-CIF team. But on that... First team, right here, Big Alan Trammell. So Alan Trammell, I always tell people, is on my All-CIF certificate, and
That's
I'm
cool.
damn proud of it. But I'll tell you what, people, and Alan will admit this, he was known actually in San Diego more as a basketball player at Kearney High School than you were as a baseball player, weren't you?
That is true, Coach. We were at Kearney High during that era. Our football and basketball teams were fairly dominant. We really were. So our baseball teams weren't too shabby, but we didn't have much attendance, and so notoriety was for those two sports. And
yeah.
so we had a good time. I think I made the right choice, but my high school days, I had a good career in basketball, but as I just mentioned, I definitely made the right choice.
What was your game? What was your game? Basketball? What a little outside shooting, a little slasher?
A little bit of everything, just like
yeah.
my baseball game. The way I look at it, no, and the reason why I say that is that I do camps and I talk to the youngsters and I tell them that my basketball days was much like what I tried to do as a shortstop, which is a well-rounded vision. So if you're a point guard, you need to see the whole court, right? And as a shortstop, that's how I look at it. You know, you can't have tunnel vision where you're just locked in on one thing. You have to have your head on the swivel. You have to be able to see multiple things. And I really correlate and use that as a similarity. That's really how I looked at it. A shortstop and a point guard are very similar.
You know, Alan, you're an unassuming guy. You're always a great teammate. I mean, anybody that's ever been around you, really, even when you were a kid, you were always a guy that loved to play the game and always respected everyone, even if they didn't have the ability anywhere close to you. I guess my question would be, I think a lot of us that knew you, watched your career, granted you were in the American League, and we saw a lot of National League ball here in San Diego, thought you should have been in the Hall of Fame a lot earlier. And you were always saying, you know, my time is going to come. But in your private moments, were there times where you're saying, man, I can't believe that I'm not getting as much recognition as I think?
I'll tell you, it might have been, you know, early in the when I was first on the ballot. But, you know, you're on the ballot for 15 years. You kind of figured things out. I mean, I wasn't getting enough votes, and I was at a lower percentage, and it wasn't like I was going to go from like 20-25% to 75%. So I think the new Veterans Committee really helped me out. But over that, Coach, I know yourself and others. I had a lot of support. That was very much appreciated. But, again, I was taught by one of the best, and I'm going to bring up my old mentor, Sparky Anderson. He taught us the right way, and I was going to be okay one way or another, whether I made it or not. Obviously, I'm very happy and very pleased, but I still am part of the game. I'm still, you know, a special assistant with the Tigers. I still get to work with kids. I still get to go to Detroit and and see the Tigers, and I'm still very much welcome there. So that's a pretty darn good feeling in itself.
You don't have to buy any meals in the Motor City, do you?
I tell you what, I really don't.
They still make you pick up a check once in a while?
Not very often.
Good.
I'll be honest with you. It's a special sports town. It's a it's got a lot of history in all the sports. And if you played in, if you were a Lion, Tiger, Red Wing, or Piston, they'll take care of you if you play there. And again, I'm very appreciative.
Alan, you go down there and work with the young guys, but then you go out during the season and, you know, you go out to early work with the guys, sit on the bench and talk baseball. And how has it changed working with middle infielders nowadays opposed to maybe, 10, 15, or, 30 years ago?
Well, I have to be careful in regards to you can't clone somebody and have them vanilla like myself. That was my game, and that's what I recognized that early on. You can only be yourself is what I'm trying to say. So there's certain fundamentals that never change. But you don't want to, again, I don't want them to say you have to be like this. I tell them certain things, and I want them to have their own little flair, if so be it. Now, obviously, I sometimes cringe with that because of the way I was brought up. But, again, this is a new generation, and so we all have to be open-minded to that.
Let me just, before I wanted to ask about Bryce Harper and your thoughts. But just sticking playing infield now, if you were a shortstop nowadays, you'd also have to take ground balls on the other side of the diamond because they do that shift so much. What do you think of all that newfangled stuff in baseball?
Well, I'm hoping that the hitters, that this is more of a fad, that some of the hitters, in all honesty, would start to make the adjustment and beat the shift. And there's a time and a place for everything. But if you're leading off an inning, I don't care if you're the fourth hitter in our lineup and you're down by a couple of runs, you need a base runner. Get a base hit. Get on base and let your teammates help you. And that's just, I'll take that to the bank, but that's how it was brought up. So I think that shouldn't change regardless of what era you're in. But I think that, again, you're watching the highlights all the time. Guys like the long ball and they want this and that. But I still think there's a time and a place for just a regular old base hit.
Yeah, I'd like to know what your launch angle was, your exit velocity.
Well, I'm laughing at these because, after the fact now, they come up and they can do all the statistics from way back. And they tell me that I had a such and such a war. Well, when I played, there was no such thing as a war. So they said, well, Tram, you were pretty good at that. But I'm laughing, well, we never even thought about that when we were playing. So that's all different now.
Still don't know. Alan Trammell, the Hall of Famer, is with us. All right, your thoughts on the Padres jumping into the Bryce Harper sweepstakes.
I
mean, it's a very exciting day in San Diego. I don't know how it's all going to turn out, but obviously he's a once-in-a-generation player.
Well, him or Machado, which I'm reading, again, that both of those guys are 26, 27 years old. They're obviously just getting into their prime. So if you're going to give a long-term contract to somebody, that's kind of the age you want to do it. It's very dangerous when you start getting into your 30s and give them an 8- to 10-year deal. But, these guys, obviously for a fan, again, as a fan of the game, it's hard to really understand these contracts. But the fact of the matter is that's what the price is. If you want to play poker like that, then that's what you're going to have to pay. But I don't think any of them are going to go poor, are they? But I'm anxious as a Padre fan. Before I was a Tiger, I was a Padre fan, and that'll never change.
Oh, no question about it. He played.
Thanks a lot, Alan. Because of you, we don't have a World Series ring in San Diego.
I tell my family and friends, strictly business.
I'd like to know how many nights you went down in about the seventh inning from where you lived up there in Kearney Mesa to check out the final few innings of the Padre game.
Well, I don't know how many times, guys, but it was often, and it actually started off with being a vendor. So I had a pass that I could get into the games. And as a Padre, of course, the attendance was a little down, so being the low man on the totem pole, I oftentimes didn't get to sell. But if they had a bigger game, then they used some of the extras. Like, that's what I would consider myself.
You show up to work, and if they didn't need you, you go watch the game.
Absolutely. There you go.
Boy, you
catch on real quick.
You had a racket going, didn't you?
I loved it. But a couple of my buddies as well. So, now that's how it all started. The dream, my gosh, going back to as yourself, going back when you're a little boy growing up in a wonderful city like San Diego, didn't get much better than that.
Alan Trammell, .o.f. It's official. Thanks for joining us again, Alan. Great catching. I was ecstatic to interview you once in Cooperstown. I didn't think we'd ever get another one chance, so thanks for dropping by.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, Chris and Coach. Always good to see you.
Appreciate it very much. There he is, Alan Trammell.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
The Hall of Famers just keep on popping by here at the Breitbart Hall of Fame induction, 73rd annual. Salute to the champions dinner. We are at the San Diego Marriott La Jolla. God, the celebrities just keep on rolling. We can't even get the show in because everyone's giving the coach John Cantara hugs, and they love the coach. I know. Bob Babbitt's here. We got Brian the Mighty Quinn.
Hey, Big Bob Babbitt bought a Super Bowl spot. How about that?
Brian the Mighty Quinn just popped by.
Yeah, he said hello. Bill McGillis.
Hall of Famer.
$150, baby.
Yeah. Hey, why don't you tell that story real quick?
Sure.
I know your lovely wife probably wants you to get in and sit at the table. Beautiful Heidi.
Oh, we, just sit right by the way, there, Bob.
I think I'll just sit right down here, guys.
Just relax.
So, we wanted to do something for the launch of our DVD and the streaming of our film, We Are Triathletes, the largest grossing film in the history of triathlon, which aired this summer. 275 theaters, 19,000 ticket sales. So I was talking to a PR buddy. I said, we're launching around February 1st. He says, why don't you buy a Super Bowl ad? I'm like, because I don't have $5 million to buy a Super Bowl ad or $73,000 to buy one in New York City. He goes, well, buy one in the smallest market in the country, the largest grossing triathlon film in the country, and on the biggest day in football in the smallest market in the country. So I bought an ad in the 210th market in Glendive, Montana for $150. And we've been doing media all week about that. It's been a blast.
$150 for a Super Bowl commercial?
That's
Nobody
right,
even
baby.
Knew that existed.
Let me
in Glendive, Montana, population 5,000.
So it'll just be seen for the 5,000 people?
That's right. Because you know what?
I love
if
that.
You live in Glendive, Montana, you'll see something that no one else will see. My commercial.
But you've got national play on this
national
all week,
play,
right?
Baby. Yeah. We've had a lot of fun with it. It's really cool.
How about Meb Keflezighi?
Meb is
and
the
me
best.
And me getting his name almost correct on
you
the
did.
Pronunciation.
Meb Keflezighi is
absolutely
it. We started
practicing a week ago Sunday.
You know what? There isn't a better example of the American dream. Someone coming over here, 10 kids. His dad escaped from Eritrea to get to the Sudan. You don't escape from Eritrea and go to the Sudan. You get the hell out of the Sudan. Eventually end up in Italy, ended up in the States. When Meb came here at the age of 12, he couldn't spell the word cat. And next thing you know, he's running a 5-minute mile, and his coach in high school is saying, this kid's going to be an Olympian. He becomes a multi-time Olympian, Olympic silver medalist, New York City marathon champion. And then he wins the most important marathon in history, one in Boston, the year after the bombings.
Yep.
American winning for the first time in over 30 years. It changed everything.
Hey, Bob, challenge athlete.
Yes.
I mean, I know you're here to support Meb, but what do you got tonight for the challenge athlete?
Well, Danny Burt is lost her leg in a motorcycle accident, and she's become one of the best adaptive surfers in the world. We've now raised over $100 million, sent over 23,000 grants for Challenge Athletes Foundation in the first 25 years. If you're watching on Super Bowl Sunday, there's going to be a 17-minute feature on quarterback Alex Ruiz, who lost his leg in a football game at Linfield High in Temecula. And we surprised him with a running leg from Drew Brees. And ESPN is doing a 17-minute feature on NFL Countdown leading into the game on Drew and Alex that will air, again, on NFL Countdown. And we're flying out to Super Bowl on Saturday, myself, Alex, and his family. And Alex will be on ESPN right after they air the feature. So it's going to be pretty darn cool.
That is awesome.
You will love it. This kid, I mean, he had the same injury as Zach Miller. Zach Miller from the Bears.
Right.
They tore the popliteal artery in the back of his knee. The difference was they were able to save Zach's leg. But Alex was without blood flow for 8 hours, ended up losing his leg below the knee.
Wow.
Next thing you know, we're surprising him last May with his running leg from his hero. when we called his mom and said we'd like to surprise him with this leg because Drew Brees is a huge fan of CAF, and they raise money through his flag football league for CAF. And we called his mom, and she started crying. She goes, my son wears number 9 because of Drew Brees. He has quotes on his wall from Drew Brees because he's undersized just like Drew. And they said he can never be a quarterback. So when we surprised him with his running leg from Drew Brees, he says to me, he says, and we're filming all this. He goes, hey, Bob, you think Drew will run some pass patterns for me? Drew goes, no problem. Alex gets up out of his wheelchair on crutches, and Drew Brees is running pass patterns for him.
That's awesome.
And the piece on Sunday will be narrated by Drew, and I haven't seen it, but I heard it's spectacular.
I'm going to look forward to that.
These kinds of stories are what this Salute to Champions night is all about.
Absolutely.
Bob Babbitt, thanks for dropping by.
Thank you, boys. Always a pleasure.
How about the classic good old days when Bob Babbitt did the Sunday night running show, competitors, and Chris Ello handled the sports updates for him.
Yes, you did.
Back in the day.
And the coachee was holding down afternoons and the mornings and doing it all, man.
We've been together for a long time.
We
Bob,
have been.
Thanks so much,
thanks,
man,
you guys. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you,
hey,
Bob.
We're having fun.
Big Bob Babbitt, one of the great guys you'll ever want to meet, by the way.
That was a good stories, too. Thank you, Bob. All right, Mr. Scraby, what's next?
Countdown.
Hit it.
Gwen and Chris wanted to rank things, and that means whatever they want.
Come on, don't get weird.
They bring you their top five of the day because it's time to start the countdown.
Well, you know, we could do a count. We always, the countdown's kind of a little bit of everything. We could just do our top five moments today. But I would have trouble ranking them because we've had so many already. Super Bowl 53 is, of course, on Sunday, so I thought today's countdown we would focus on your most memorable plays. Memorable plays in Super Bowl history. What pops to your mind out there? Do your countdown along with ours. The top five memorable plays in Super Bowl history. Coach, you want to start us off?
Yeah, I'll
wait. You have to
five.
Wait for the sounder. Okay, now you can go.
I'm going to go number five, John Elway scoring that big touchdown against the Green Bay Packers when he helicoptered into the end zone. And I remember the gas, Reggie White over on the sidelines for the Green Bay Packers. He wasn't even on the field for that final play, and the Broncos winning the Super Bowl here,
right here in
San Diego. Right.
John Elway helicoptering through the air is a classic Super Bowl moment, isn't it?
Oh,
it's
absolutely.
I mean, if any time you ever see a highlight package of John Elway's career, there's no way they get through it without the helicopter play. Good call, Coach. All right, my number five is Mike Jones.
Mike Jones.
And you're going, who's he?
I remember who he tackled.
He is the guy for the St. Louis Rams that tackled Kevin Dyson at the half-yard line on the final play of Super Bowl 34.
That's a great call.
That saved the Rams' only Super Bowl victory. They were ahead of the Titans 23-16. Time running out. Final play. Steve McNair, the late Steve McNair, throws the slant pass. Dyson catches it. Going into the end zone to send the game to overtime. Mike Jones brings him down at the half-yard line. And the Rams and Dick Vermeil wins his Super Bowl. That's my number five.
And Dick Vermeil started to cry on the spot.
Of course. We had him on the show a couple weeks ago, and he was crying, and I loved every minute of it.
Number four.
All right, number four. I'm going to go, I believe, the 2008 season, Santonio Holmes' TD catch against Arizona with 35 seconds left. Steelers win it 27-23 over the Arizona Cardinals.
You know, I actually just watched that game on NFL Network the other day. It was a great game.
Larry Fitzgerald was unbelievable in that game, I might add.
And there was another great play in that game as well that almost made my list. It didn't quite make it. But how about James Harrison in that game with a 102-yard interception return on the final play of the first half?
Yeah.
He lumbered all the way down the field and scored a big touchdown for Pittsburgh. All right, my number four is in Super Bowl 19. You got to go back a little bit, but it has to do with a San Diego guy who I'm sure is in the Breitbart Hall of Fame. The play was called 17 Bob Trey O, but nobody ever ran it in Super Bowl 19, like the great Marcus Allen. Do you remember that twisting 74-yard touchdown run, Coach, against the Redskins?
Yep.
Where he started to run around the left end, had to reverse his field completely, come all the way back around behind the quarterback, and then shot up the middle of field, cut past three or four guys. One of the greatest runs in NFL history, and my number four Super Bowl play.
Number three.
All right, number three for me, 2014, Malcolm Butler intercepting Russell Wilson down on the goal line, and Seattle could have run it in with Marshawn Lynch, but they decided to try to throw it, and Malcolm Butler became a hero for the New England Patriots.
That was Super Bowl 49, and that is an all-time classic play, no question. Pete Carroll will never live it down, that's for sure. It's always funny to me that they just say, well, all they had to do was hand it to Marshawn Lynch and he would have scored. I agree he probably would have, but that's not 100% guaranteed that he would have scored, right? I mean, you know, the
I think
Patriots,
I'd have taken my chances.
I know. It was the wrong play call, I grant you. But I'm just saying, it was just assumed that the beast would have gone into the end zone. All right, my number three play happened last year. The final play of the first half, fourth and goal. The Philadelphia Eagles do not go for the sure field goal. Instead, they go for the touchdown and run a double reverse pass back to the quarterback, Nick Foles, who catches it for the touchdown.
The Philly special.
Which ultimately proved the difference in the Eagles' upset of the Patriots last year.
And every offensive coordinator and the pros at college and high school put it in their playbook this year.
Yeah, everybody tried it. Well, you know what? The Patriots tried it in the same game, except Brady dropped the pass because he's a noodle arm.
He is a noodle arm, and he has noodle legs, too.
I just said that for Scraby.
Thank you.
All right. Number two.
All right, number two for me, you got to go back to 2001, Adam Vinatieri, game-winning field goal against the St. Louis Rams.
It started the New England Patriots dynasty. It was a brilliant kick.
And all the confetti came down.
It was the same. It was a great kick, but it was the same season that he made those two kicks in the snow in the Tuck Rule game.
Right.
And that's what kind of set Vinatieri on course to become one of the greatest kickers in NFL history.
Just
he's
signed.
Still going.
Yeah, 24th season.
All right, my number two also has to do with a kicker, believe it or not. But it's not a great moment for a kicker.
Oh, I know where you're
it's
going.
It's one of the all-time classic blunder plays.
It wasn't a gimme field goal, though. It wasn't a gimme field goal.
But it was the blunder of all time in Super Bowl VII, Garo Yepremian.
Oh, that one, okay.
The Miami Dolphins trying a, I don't know, maybe a 50-yard field goal at the end of the game. If he made the field goal, Miami finishes the season 17-0 by beating the Redskins 17-0. But instead, the field goal is blocked. Garo Yepremian picks it up, tries to throw a pass. It fumbles out of his hands. Mike Bass of the Redskins runs the other way for a touchdown. Dolphins do win the game 14-7, but that was one of the great blunders in NFL history, and it happened in a Super Bowl. It's my number two play.
I thought you were going to go maybe with Scott Norwood missing that 47-yard field goal because that wasn't a gimme.
No, I would never get on Norwood for that as much as the Buffalo Bills fans. I wonder if we're both going to have the same number one play. Let's find out.
Number one.
All right, I got to go in that New England, New York Giant football game. The pass from Manning to Tyree.
Yeah.
Our boy Rodney Harrison trying to break it up, but Tyree was able to get it to stick to his helmet.
Yeah, that's my number one play also.
Boy, Rodney still has nightmares about that play.
You know, it's funny, too, because David Tyree is basically a no one in terms of his NFL career, but that one play made him a someone. And the guy he made the play against was certainly a someone, but on that play is largely forgotten, really, other than by himself. But Rodney Harrison, you're right, he was the guy there trying to get that ball pried free, and he couldn't do it. Tyree was able to pin it to his helmet. The other part of that play that's remarkable, and I'm sure you've seen it many times, Coach, but was the escaping of Eli Manning from a certain sack just to get the pass off.
You know, our boy Thomas Andrews thinks it's all holding.
Oh, stop it, Thomas Andrews.
He told me this the other day.
The greatest thing about that play is that it set up the Giants for a victory that kept the Patriots from being undefeated and allowed Garo Yapremian's Dolphins to remain the only undefeated team in NFL history.
And Mercury Morris and Nick Bonacani popped a bottle of champagne.
They popped a big bottle of champagne. Every time they ask Larry Zonka about that Yapremian play, he goes, I wanted to go out and break his neck. What was he doing out there? All right, that's our countdown to the top five.
Closed.
Super Bowl plays of all time. We both came up with the same number. 73rd annual San Diego Marriott La Jolla. It's getting loud in here. That's because the great Steve Fisher has arrived on the scene. You will be inducted into the Breitbart Hall of Fame tonight. Sir, congratulations. And as I mentioned to you when you came over, it's about time you get an honor of some kind. You know what I mean? I think you've been overlooked all these years.
Well, I think they're loud because they're calling for me. I double parked out front. I just left my car. I said, I got to get out of the rain. Somebody parked my car. So I may not have a car when we leave, but I'm truly honored to be a part of tonight's festivities and to go into the Bob Breitbart Hall of Fame. Just saying Bob Breitbart in the same breath that you're in is an honor. And with Terry and Meb, it's a great group of guys, and I'm very fortunate. Feel very humbled and very, very proud.
Hey, Coach, I want to track back to when you came to San Diego State. And even before you came to San Diego State, what did you know about San Diego State when you came down to interview for this position? And what was told to you during that interview, if you got the job, what you'd be able to do?
Well, I knew of San Diego State, obviously. Rick Bay, the AD who hired me, had a history at Michigan. He was a wrestling coach at Michigan. He left before I got there. And ironically, when he was at San Diego State trying to get an opponent to open the building, he and I talked about Michigan coming out and opening and playing the first game in the building. I'm not sure. I think he might have gotten Ohio State to do it. I'm not sure. But Rick was pretty honest with me in terms of, you know, what was there. But he also, you know, a little bit like me, close your eyes and dream about what it could be. And, Coach, what I had the luxury of having, my predecessors didn't, and that's Cox Arena, now Viejas Arena. Fred Trinkle had it for, what, 2 years?
Right.
I had it from the moment I set foot on campus, and I would not have taken the job if we were still playing in Peterson. No disrespect for Peterson, but I thought I could sell Cox. I knew I could sell San Diego and the community, and I felt like we had a chance to be successful.
Isn't it fantastic that San Diego State has become what it's become? How often do you look back on what you accomplished and even think, you know what, it almost exceeds a little bit of what my expectations of what I could have accomplished were? Because when I stand there before a game and look up at all the banners, I mean, I just love it, and I couldn't have imagined it all happening. You know, even as great as you were before you got here, it was so much hard work went into accomplishing what you did.
One brick at a time, and a lot of people were responsible for the success we had. I got good vibes when I met with President Steven Weber at the time. When he said, I'm a philosopher by trade. I don't know sports. I don't know basketball. But I do know sports should be and can be the picture window of a university. And we want that to be good. We want it to be done the right way. But we want the basketball program. And that resonated with me. I've always been confident. I'm a realist, but I've been confident. I, with all my heart and soul, felt we would win. What happened that truly still amazes me was when we went through 5 or 6 years where we were sold out before the ball was even thrown up. And the atmosphere in that arena has been second to none across the country when people said they won't come. If you play, they'll come for an event. You play Arizona, they'll come to see Arizona. But they come now to see the Aztecs, and they come in droves, and they proudly wear their Aztec colors. That's what truly has amazed me.
Right.
Well, the thing about Coach, and, you know, we used to do the show together, and, you know, he's a basketball fan.
But he liked it better when he did the show with me. Well, we've talked about this.
Well, but we always made sure we had better food when he was doing it with me.
Oh, that's true. You did.
But nonetheless, he's a basketball fan. He would talk about games he'd gone home and watched after practice and looked at tape and everything. Let me ask you this, and I know everybody was disappointed when you announced your retirement. I think everybody was kind of hoping you'd maybe go another year or two before you announced your retirement. But you decided to retire. You're in your second year out of coaching. You're still around it, but do you miss it a little bit?
You know, John, a lot of people have asked that, and I have a two-pronged response. I love the fact that I don't have the stress. I go to every home game. Angie loves it more than I do, that she doesn't have the stress. I'm still involved, which makes me feel good. What you miss, and both of you can relate to this, is the daily interaction with your players, the routine on that practice floor, on the bus, in the competition, the smiles after a great win, the tears after a tough loss. You miss those kinds of things. And after 50 years of doing it, it just that doesn't just end. You know, those are things that, you know, that you say, boy, I missed that piece to it. But I'm very, very happy, and I know I made the right decision.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about this year's team and how Brian Dutcher's doing again. I go back to an interview I saw you do last year, last season, at Nevada, Reno. You were at the game, and they interviewed you on television. And I believe the Aztecs were in the middle of a losing streak at the time, and you said, you watch out. This team is going to get it together and probably make some noise in March. And lo and behold, you were absolutely right. That's exactly what happened last year. What is your sense of this year's team? It's been up, it's been down, it's been up lately. I still think there's a shot for this team to make something out of this whole deal. What do you think?
I do too. I will go on record. We are not as talented as we were last year. We don't have as many, we're not as talented. But we are talented enough. We have a veteran senior guard combination and Jeremy Hemsley and Devin Watson. You got Jalen McDaniels, who's a potential pro. We have a nucleus, Matt Mitchell, to beat anybody. We can score the ball.
Yeah.
Much better than some of the teams that I had to do. What we've done, if you go back to New Mexico, at Fresno for a half, Vegas and Air Force, those four games, we've played really good basketball for the most part. If we continue to do that, I think we'll have a chance against anybody. Nevada's the best team in our league. They are legitimate. They could win a national championship. Can we beat them? Yeah, we could. They'll probably win the league. But we have a chance to fight and scratch and claw and finish this conference season the way we're playing right now. I really do feel that we can.
Well, Coach, we're going to let you go. The doors are open. You got to go sit up at the head table up there, and congratulations. Glad we're both glad we're here tonight to see this. Well-deserved, and thanks for everything you've done, not only for San Diego State and the basketball program, but what you brought to our fine city.
I appreciate you saying that, Coach. I appreciate the two of you. We've done shows together for a long, long time, and with great respect and admiration for both of you. So thank you very much for having me on tonight.
Have fun. But
before he goes, I got to say one really quick thing. At his basketball camp one summer, he was filling in coaching one of the teams because the coach was late. I was reffing that game. 20 seconds into the game, he was yelling at me for making a bad call.
Well, it's like every other basketball coach in this town.
I love it. I'll never forget that moment as long as I live. Chris, what are you looking at out there?
I'll never forget that. Not true. I'm not going to. I would never do that. Chris Ello is one of the finest refs I've ever seen.
There you go. That's what we want on the record. Thanks, Coach.
Take care.
Thank you, guys.
Steve Fisher right there. We've had Alan Trammell, Hall of Famer. Steve Fisher, Hall of Famer. Meb Keflezighi, the best distant runner in American history. Who else has been on the show today?
Randy Jones.
Cy Young Award winner, the great lefty Randy Jones. And a cast of thousands. It's been a lot of fun today from the San Diego Marriott La Jolla and the 73rd Annual Salute to the Champions Award Dinner. But go figure. And there's John Shacklett, one of the all-time greatest prep coaches in the history of San Diego County.
No question about that.
He and his Morris Tigers dominating for decades and decades over the years. But
and we're doing good, Coach. Great to have you
Coach,
in the
to
building
have you
tonight.
Here. Coach Shacklett, how are you, Coach? Nice to see you.
Doing fine.
Good. Good. Good to see you. You got any Morse athletes out here tonight?
Well, to be honest with you, I'm not sure.
Oh.
I'm sure we're going to see some of the – we had three coaches that made the CIF in the state finals. One of them.
Sure. I saw a bunch of the young players from San Diego High walk in earlier. They came over and said hello to
James.
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah, some of their players came by and said hi and that I've gotten to know over the last year. And it was a great bounce-back year for city football, wasn't it?
Well, I'll tell you, especially for San Diego High. And I have to kill kid Charles James, because I didn't know his first name for a while because we call him Pookie all the time.
So he's one of your former players.
You're right. Yeah.
I'm just glad to see the city winning some stuff. I'm tired of these North County guys walking off with too many trophies, Coach.
I'll let John Carroll
know. You know what?
I got
to tell you, I was really happy, and I got to know some of the kids on some of these teams down in the city. They're good kids. They work hard. They got coaches that are working hard. Right. And I think the biggest problem, and you can address this a little bit, Coach, because I remember when you were at Morse and I went down and visited you on campus a couple of times. You know, the biggest thing I think with the city schools has been stability of coaches, because there's been a very high turnover rate in a lot of the city schools.
You're right, especially in the last 10, 15 years. When I started, everybody was 10, 15, 20 years. I was 30 years at Morse, and while that's a long time, it wasn't that unusual. But the thing is, we get guys coming in, and my other concern is that a lot of them are not educators that come in, and I think that really sets the tone for the type of program you're going to have.
I don't disagree with that. Yeah. We're going to let you get in. They're serving dinner. We don't want you to miss dinner.
You miss your dinner, Coach.
I better go.
Thanks, Coach.
And,
nice
of course,
to see you.
He's on with Paul Rudy, our buddy on Shaq Pigpen.
That's right. John Shacklett. I covered the – I didn't want to bring this up to him, but I covered a classic CIF final 1 year, Morse and Point Loma, John Shacklett against Benny Edens.
Ooh.
You talk about a couple of legends.
I went out
in that game. I think Point Loma pulled it out on a last second field goal.
One of the first interviews I ever did, I was on 690 Extra Gold with Irv Harrigan and Paul Bloom. This is when I first got into radio in 1987. And my first job was on Friday mornings, I'd be on with Irv and Paul, and I'd talk about the top high school games. And at that point in time, 690 Extra Gold had the Chargers. And they had a tailgate show from 10 to 11, and my job was to go out and interview a high school coach and a high school player each and every week. Well, the first week I went to Rancho Buena Vista. I interviewed Craig Bell, and the first high school athlete I ever interviewed was Dave Roberts, the Dodger manager, and he was a sophomore. Then I ended up going out and talking with Benny Edens, and of course Benny was a great legend, but I remember going down to Morse High School when Ty Morrison, that big All-American linebacker, and Darrell Lewis, a defensive back, they were down there. And I'll tell you what, when you walked on that campus at Morse, and I know they had a principal and they had vice principals, but there was nobody at Morse High School that commanded more respect than John Shacklett. I mean, when he had those football teams rolling down there, everybody in that community and even the administrators, they looked at John Shacklett for leadership. He's a great man.
Changed a lot of people's lives for the better, no question about it. All right, we are now. But what I was actually, before John Shacklett walked up, I was talking about all the things that we had on the show today. But the coach is all excited about what we got coming up next, so let's let it roll.
Professional football is alive and well in San Diego.
What? Are you serious?
It's that time of the week to get caught up on what's happening on the gridiron.
You want to play football or not?
It's time for our San Diego Fleet Update on 97.3 The Fan.
Thomas Andrews, every week he updates us on our professional football team in San Diego, the San Diego Fleet. Thomas Andrews, what do you have for us this week, my friend?
Thanks, Chris and Coach. Got a quick three things to update you guys on. One, so starting on number three.
Number three.
So the Fleet played their first scrimmage game last Sunday versus the Orlando Apollo Give you a couple quick hitters from that was the team put up actually 476 total offensive yards, 364 passing, 112 rushing, but they ended up losing 31-28 on a missed two-point conversion. Starting quarterback Mike Bercovici had four fumbles in the game, lost two of them, and threw two interceptions, one for a pick six, and was sacked eight times in this game. So the line play is going to have to step up for this team going to their next game a week from Sunday versus the Commanders of San Antonio, coached by Mike Riley, who was the San Diego Chargers head coach from 1999 to 2001. So, first
so
snap.
So the Fleet played. Where was that game played, Thomas? Do you know?
It was.
Did they go down to Orlando for that game? Or?
No, they're out in. I believe yes, they were actually in Orlando because they've been practicing down in San Antonio all week. That's where their training camp's been. They've been doing like dual training camp with the Commanders of San Antonio.
Okay.
So yeah, they played at Orlando for that.
Good details from that Orlando game, though, Cody. You're not going to get stuff like that everywhere.
Well, I don't like
right
that
here.
Eight sacks, and I don't like Bercovici dropping the ball four times. I mean, he better than that.
Don't say stuff like that. You get the coach riled up. He doesn't like it.
All right, so for number two.
Number two.
I've got some updates to the rules that they've been – they're kind of – nothing has been set in stone officially, but they – so during these scrimmages, every team just went through the they've changed some things up, though. So on their – when we talked last time about their way – since there's going to be no extra points and no kickoffs, the one way right. of being able to get that onside recovery, it's a you're going to run one play, but it's like a fourth – it used to be fourth and 10, and if you convert, the drive will continue. But instead, it'll be a fourth and 12. I think they assumed that 12 yards is a little harder to get than 10 yards. So
instead of an onside kick, you line up on your own 30. You go for one play. If you make 12 yards – you get the ball again.
And you just keep
not,
the drive
you turn
going.
It over, and it's like you lost the onside kick.
Yep.
I think it's an interesting rule that the NFL may want to take a look at because they really are trying to get rid of the kickoff in the National Football League.
Oh, within 5 years, maybe less, they're going to get rid of the kickoff. The kickoff return specialist is going to be goodbye, and it's going to take a roster spot away. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how the Players Association deals with that because they're always wanting to increase the roster rather than decrease the roster.
And I know earlier this, or with all the Super Bowl coming up and stuff, the half times have been cut from 15 minutes down to 13. So they're really trying to make these games about 2.5 hours max. And
right, you told us that. And the Super Bowl halftime this week Sunday will be how many hours?
Probably at least 20 minutes or more.
No, way more than that. It takes 20 minutes just to get the stage set up at the Super Bowl, for heaven's sake.
Yeah, I think a 2.5 hour game is absolutely perfect. In fact, I'll share with you, when I was the general manager of the Sockers, I wanted to get our game over by 9:15. We would start at 7:10, and I wanted to get it over anywhere between 2 hours and 5 minutes, 2 hours and 15 minutes. I mean, you want to keep the game moving. You don't want to be boring, and, you know, you got all these replays that slow everything down. Now they're talking about more replays. Hey, if they can get that TV window for 2.5 hours for these Alliance of American Football games, I think their ratings may be pretty good. I think this is going to be a pretty competitive league, actually. There are going to be some good players in this league.
So going on to that number two with the new rules and stuff, there was actually some breaking news out today that the AAF got a new technology and broadcast deal. So according to a report from John Oren of Sports Business Daily, the AAF will also have games on TNT and Bleacher Report Live thanks to a deal with Turner Network. So they'll be also airing multiple games a week on the NFL Network as well. The Turner deal will see the TNT televise one regular season and one playoff game each season. This season, TNT will carry its game between the Salt Lake Stallions and the Birmingham Iron on February 16th as a lead-in to the NBA All-Star Saturday night.
That's good. All right. A little exposure. We almost forgot the sounder. That's right. That's our Fleet sounder, by the way, Coach, in case you're wondering. Coach just about jumped out of his shorts here when he heard that. He's a little worried.
All right, now let's go to number one.
Number one.
So yesterday was the roster cuts. So the Fleet had to move from 75 players. Originally, it was supposed to be 50, but again, they're testing everything out, and they moved the rosters to 52. So not quite the NFL. So 52-man rosters were cut down. Players were cut. Some notable players still on the Fleet. We have seven players who played at San Diego State. We have defensive tackle Alex Barrett, Offensive tackle Daniel Brunskill, tight end Gavin Escobar, offensive guard Daryl Green, wide receiver Cameron Kelly, linebacker Eric Pinkins, and offensive tackle Terry Poole. All former Aztecs playing with the fleet, so back in their...
You know who's the best? I don't want to say the best player because those are all great players. But the kid that really had a shot in the NFL for a little while out of that list is Alex Barrett. He was a dominating defensive lineman for San Diego State the year they beat Houston to win that bowl game. And then he got a look with the Lions, and I would think if he can play well, and you know, this is the kind of situation that I think is perfect for a guy like Alex Barrett, because he could play, he just needs an opportunity at the next level, and I think hopefully he can, you know, dominate a little bit in this league and get that chance.
Well, a lot of the guys that Thomas talked about are definitely athletically,
sure,
where they could play in the NFL. Terry Poole, an offensive lineman. Sometimes offensive linemen take a little bit longer to develop, but I think, and I'm surprised Terry Poole, quite honestly, didn't stick on a practice roster this year. I think he's going to get another opportunity. I think the Alliance American Football is going to give him a great opportunity to showcase what he can do as an offensive lineman. The other guy that's trying to show that he can still play, who's had a pretty decent NFL career, is Gavin Escobar.
That's,
I mean,
right,
he played for a number of years for the Dallas Cowboys, but you know, he's on the outside looking in right now. And Cameron Kelly's a guy that a couple of years ago a lot of NFL teams liked, whether it be as a corner, nickelback, or possibly a safety. So he's another guy I'd keep my eye on.
One of the biggest eyebrow, not an eyebrow but one of the surprises though, has been linebacker AJ Tarpley, who was a first round pick by the Bills a couple years ago but had to retire early due to concussions. But he's out of Stanford and has actually came back, got himself healthy, and is now coming back. It was actually a real force to be reckoned with in that scrimmage game.
He might want to re-retire if he had concussion problems a couple of years ago, because those don't get any better.
That worries me.
Did I missed this. Did Thomas tell you that Cameron Kelly is a wide receiver?
Yes, he said wide receiver for Cameron Kelly.
So okay.
Now, he's been a defensive back.
Yeah, I know. That's crazy. No,
well, they have him listed on the roster as wide receiver because originally he was as a safety, but they're updated rosters after cuts. He is a wide receiver.
Look, if Jalen Ramsey can go play wide receiver in the Pro Bowl, you know, anybody can go do it. All right, give me that sounder. There is no show in San Diego like the Gwen and Chris show that loves their San Diego fleet. Thank you, Thomas. Good update on the fleet. All right. Enough with the sounder. Thank you, Thomas. Good job.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.